Karis thought back to Osterreich's mention of a shaman of the Altai in Siberia who had deliberately invited possession as a means of performing a magical act. Examined in a clinic just prior to performing the act of levitation, his pulse rate had spurted to 100, and then afterward leaped to an amazing 200, while there were also marked changes in his bodily temperature and respiration. So his paranormal action was tied to physiology. It was caused by some bodily energy or force. But as proof of possession, Karis had learned, the church wanted clear and exterior, verifiable phenomena that suggested, he'd forgotten the wording. But tracing a finger down the page of the Satan book lying on his desk, Karis found it. Verifiable exterior phenomena which suggest the idea that they are due to the extraordinary intervention of an intelligent cause other than man. Was that the case with the shaman? No. No, not necessarily. And what of Reagan? Is that the case with her? Karis turned to a passage he had bracketed in pencil in his copy of the Roman ritual. The exorcist will simply be careful that none of the patient's manifestations are left unaccounted for. Karis thoughtfully nodded. Okay, then. Let's see. Pacing, he ran through the manifestations of Reagan's disorder, along with their possible explanations. He ticked them off mentally, one by one. The startling change in Reagan's features. Well, partly her illness and partly undernourishment, although mostly, he concluded, it was due to physiognomy being an expression of one's psychic constitution. The startling change in Reagan's voice. He had yet to hear her real voice, Karis thought. And even if that had been liked, as reported by her mother, constant shrieking would thicken the vocal cords with a consequent deepening of the voice. The only problem here being the unexplained booming volume of that voice, for even with a thickening of the cords, this would seem to be physiologically impossible. And yet, Karis considered, in states of anxiety or pathology, displays of paranormal strength in excess of muscular potential were known to be a commonplace. Might not vocal cords and voice box be subject to the same mysterious effect? Reagan suddenly extended vocabulary and knowledge. Cryptomnesia. Buried recollections of words and data she had once been exposed to, even in infancy, perhaps. In somnambulists, and frequently in people at the point of death, the buried data often came to the surface with almost photographic fidelity. Reagan's recognition of him as a priest. A good guess. If she had read the chapter on possession, she might have expected a visit by a priest. And according to Jung, the unconscious awareness and sensitivity of hysterical patients could sometimes be 50 times greater than normal, which Jung thought accounted for seemingly authentic thought reading, be it table tapping by mediums. For what the medium's unconscious was actually reading were the tremors and vibrations created in the table by the hands of the person whose thoughts were supposedly being read. The tremors formed a pattern of letters or numbers. Thus, Reagan might conceivably have read his identity merely from his manner, or even from the scent of holy oils on his hands. Reagan's knowledge of the death of his mother. Another good guess. He was 46.
Could you help an old altar boy, Father?
Textbooks used in Catholic seminaries accepted telepathy as both a reality and a natural phenomenon. Reagan's precocity of intellect. This was by far the most difficult of all to explain. But in the course of personally observing a case of multiple personality involving alleged occult phenomena, the psychiatrist Jung had concluded that in states of hysterical somnambulism not only were unconscious perceptions of the senses heightened, but also the functioning of the intellect. For the new personality in the case in question seemed clearly more intelligent than the first. And yet did merely reporting the phenomenon explain it? Karras abruptly stopped pacing and hovered by his desk, brought up short as it suddenly dawned upon him that Reagan's pun on Herod was even more complicated than at first it had appeared. For when the Pharisees told Christ of Herod's threats, the Jesuit recalled, Christ had answered, "Go and tell that fox that I cast out devils." Karras glanced at the tape of Reagan's voice and then wearily sat down at the desk where he lit another cigarette and blew out a ragged cone of bluish-gray smoke as he thought once again of the burner boys and of the case of the 8-year-old girl who had manifested symptoms of full-blown possession. What book had this girl read that had enabled her unconscious mind to simulate the symptoms of possession to such perfection? And how did the unconscious of victims in China communicate the symptoms to the various unconscious minds of people possessed in Siberia, in Germany, in Africa, and everywhere else in every culture and period of time, so that the symptoms were always the same? "Incidentally, your mother is in here with us, Karras." The Jesuit was staring straight ahead, unseeing. Wisps of smoke from the cigarette held between his fingers wafting up into life, and then instant death like mistaken recognitions and one's memory of dreams. He looked down at the left-hand bottom drawer of his desk, holding silent and still for several moments, before at last leaning over, pulling open the drawer, and extracting a faded English language exercise book for an adult education course. His mother's. He set it on the desk, waited, and then thumbed through the pages with a tender care. At first, letters of the alphabet over and over, then simple exercises. Lesson 6, my complete address. Between the pages, an attempt at a letter. "Dear Dimmy, I have been waiting." Then another beginning. Incomplete. He looked away. Saw her eyes at the window. Waiting. "Domine non sum dignus." The eyes became Reagan's. "Speak but the word." Karras glanced again at the tape of Reagan's voice. He left the room and took the tape to a campus language lab, found a tape recorder and sat down, carefully threaded the tape to an empty reel, clamped on earphones, turned the switch to the on position, and then, exhausted and intense, he leaned forward and listened. For a time, only tape hiss, squeaking of the mechanism. Suddenly, a thumping sound of activation, noises.
"Hello?"
Then a whining feedback. Chris McNeil, her tone hushed in the background. "Not so close to the microphone, honey. Hold it back."
"Like this?"
No, more."
"Like this?"
Yeah, go ahead, honey. Go ahead now, just talk." The microphone bumping a table. Then the sweet, clear voice of Reagan McNeil.
"Hello, Daddy. This is me, Mom, I can't tell what to say."
"Oh, just tell him how you are, honey. Tell him about all of the things you've been doing."
Daddy, well, you see, I hope you can hear me okay. And, well, now, let's see. First we're in Washington. It's where the president lives. And this house, you know, Daddy, it's Darn! Daddy, wait now. I better start over. See, Daddy, there's...
Karis heard the rest only dimly, and as if from afar, and through the roaring of blood in his ears, as through his being there swelled an overwhelming intuition. The thing that I saw in that room wasn't Reagan. Karis returned to the Jesuit residence hall, where he found an unoccupied cubicle and said his mass before the early morning rush. As he lifted the host in consecration, it trembled in his fingers with a hope that he dared not hope, that he fought with every particle and fiber of his will. "For this is my body," he intoned with a whispered intensity. "No, it's bread. It's nothing but bread." He dared not love again and lose. That loss was too great. That pain too keen. The cause of his skepticism and his doubts, his attempts to eliminate natural causes in the case of Reagan's seeming possession, was the fiery intensity of his yearning to be able to believe. He bowed his head and placed the consecrated host in his mouth, where in a moment it would stick in the dryness of his throat and of his faith. After Mass, he skipped breakfast, making notes for his lecture, then met with his class at the Georgetown University Medical School, where he managed to thread hoarsely through the ill-prepared lecture. And in considering the symptoms of manic mood disorders, you'll...
Daddy, this is me. This is me.
But who was me? Karis dismissed the class early and returned to his room, where he immediately sat at his desk and intently re-examined the church's position on the paranormal signs of demonic possession. Was I being too hard-nosed? He wondered. He scrutinized the high points in Satan. Telepathy, natural phenomenon, even telekinesis, the moving of objects from a distance, our forefathers, science. Nowadays we must be more cautious, the seeming paranormal evidence notwithstanding. As he came to what followed, Karis slowed down the pace of his reading. All conversations held with the patient must be carefully analyzed, for if they present the same system of association of ideas and of logico-grammatical habits that he exhibits in his normal state, the possession must then be held suspect. Karis gently shook his head. No, doesn't cut it. He glanced to the plate on the facing page. A demon. His gaze flicked down idly to the caption. Pazuzu. Karis shut his eyes and envisioned the death of the exorcist, Father Tranquille, the final agonies, the bellowing and the hissing and the vomiting, the hurlings to the ground from his bed by his demons, who were furious because soon he would be dead and beyond their torment. And then Lucas, my God, Father Lucas. Lucas kneeling at the dying Tranquille's bedside, praying, and at the moment of his death, Lucas instantly assuming the identity of Tranquille's demons and viciously kicking at the still warm corpse, at the shattered, clawed body, strongly reeking of excrement and vomit, while four strong men were attempting to restrain him, for he did not stop, it was reported, until the corpse had been carried from the room. Could it be, wondered Karis, could the only hope for Reagan be the ritual of exorcism? Must he open up that locker of aches? He could not shake it or leave it untested. He must know. And yet how? Karis opened his eyes. Conversations with the patient must be carefully... Yes. Yes, yes, why not? If discovery that Reagan's speech patterns and that of the demon turned out to be markedly different, that would leave possession open as a possibility. whereas if the patterns were the same, it would have to be ruled out. Kara stood up and paced the room. What else? What else? He was thinking. Something. Quick. Wait a minute. Kara stopped in his tracks, staring down in thought. That chapter in the book on witchcraft. Had it mentioned? Yeah. Yeah, it had. It had stated that demons invariably reacted with fury when confronted with a consecrated host, or with holy relics, or even... Karras lifted his head and stared ahead with a sudden realization. And with holy water. Right. That could nail it one way or the other. He feverishly rummaged through his black valise. He was looking for a holy water vial. Willie admitted him to the house, and in the entry he glanced up toward Reagan's bedroom. Shouts, obscenities. And yet not in the deep, coarse voice of the demon. Much lighter, raspy, broad British. Yes, it was the manifestation that had fleetingly appeared when Karras had last seen Reagan. Karras looked at a waiting Willie. She was staring in puzzlement at the round Roman collar, at the priestly robes. Where's Mrs. McNeil, please? Willie motioned him upstairs. Thank you. Karras moved to the staircase, climbed, saw Chris in the hall. She was sitting in a chair near Reagan's bedroom, head lowered, her arms folded across her chest. As the Jesuit approached, she heard the swishing of his robes, turned and saw him, and quickly stood up. Hello, Father. Karras frowned. There were bluish sacks beneath her eyes. Did you sleep? He asked with concern. Oh, yeah, a little. Karras shook his head in admonishment. Chris. Well, I couldn't, Chris told him, motioning with her head at the door to Reagan's bedroom. She's been doing that all night. Any vomiting? No. Chris took hold of the sleeve of his cassock as if to lead him away. Come on, Father, let's go downstairs where we can... No, I'd like to see you. Right now? Something's wrong here, Karras reflected. Chris looked tense, afraid. Why not, he asked. Chris glanced furtively at Reagan's bedroom door. From within shrieked the hoarse, mad British voice.
Damn Nazi bastard!
Chris looked down and aside. Go ahead, she said softly. Go on in. Have you got a tape recorder here in the house, Chris? You know, a little one, portable? Asked Karras. Chris looked up. Yeah, we do, Father. Why? Could you have it brought up to the room with a blank reel of tape, please? Abruptly, Chris frowned with incipient alarm. What for? Hey, wait a minute now. You mean you want a tape, Reagan? Well, it's important. No way, Father. No, absolutely not. Look, I need to make comparisons of patterns of speech, Karras said to her earnestly. It could prove to the church authorities that your daughter is really possessed. They both turned to the suddenly loud sound of an excoriating stream of obscenities directed at Carl as the houseman opened Reagan's bedroom door and emerged with a laundry sack filled with soiled diapers and bedding. His face ashen, closed the door behind him, muting the continuing tirade. Get a fresh one on for her, Carl? Chris asked. The manservant's fearful glance went from Karras, then to Chris. They are on, he said tersely. He turned and walked quickly down the hallway to the staircase. Chris listened to his thumping, quick steps going down, and when the sounds had dwindled into silence, she turned to Karras, and with her shoulders slumping, looking downcast, she said quietly and submissively, Okay, Father, I'll have it sent up. And abruptly she was hurrying away down the hall. Karras watched her. What was she hiding, he wondered. something. Then, noticing the sudden silence within, he moved to the bedroom door, opened it, entered, closed the door behind him quietly, and turned front and stared at the horror, at the emaciated, skeletal thing on the bed that was watching intently with mocking eyes that were filled with cunning and with hate and, most unsettling of all, with a posture of towering authority. Karras moved slowly to the foot of the bed, where he stopped and then listened to the quiet rumbling of diuretic voiding into plastic pants.
"Why, hello, Karras," Reagan greeted him cordially.
"Hello," the priest answered calmly. "Tell me, how are you feeling?"
"At the moment, very happy to see you." "Yes, very glad." And now a long, furred tongue lolled out of her mouth, while the eyes appraised Karras with naked insolence. "Flying your colors, I see." "Oh, very good." Another rumbling. "You don't mind a bit of stink, do you, Karras?"
"No, not at all."
"What a liar."
"Does lying bother you?"
"Mildly. But the devil likes liars." "Only good ones, my dear Karras. Only good ones. Moreover, who told you I'm the devil?"
"Well, didn't you?"
"Ah, well, I might have. I might. I'm
not well.
By the way, did you believe me?"
"Oh, I did."
"Oh, then my apologies in case I misled you. In fact, I'm just a poor struggling demon. A devil. A subtle distinction, but one not entirely lost upon our father in hell. Nasty term, that. Hell. I've been mentioning we ought to think of changing it to the Scottish dimension, but he never seems to listen. You won't mention my slip of the tongue to him, Karras, now will you? Huh? When you see him?
See him?
Is he here? In the piglet? Oh, no. No such luck.
No.
We're just a poor little family of wandering souls. By the way, you don't blame us for being here, do you? After all, we have no place to go, no home.
And how long are you planning to stay?
Face contorted in sudden rage, Reagan jerked up from the pillow as she shouted in fury, "Until the piglet dies!" And then as suddenly she settled back onto her pillows with a thick-lipped, drooling grin, saying, "Incidentally, what an excellent day for an exorcism." The book, thought Karras. She must have read that in the book. The sardonic eyes were staring piercingly. "Oh, do we get it soon, Karras, would you?" "Very soon."
"You would like that?"
"Oh, intensely."
"But wouldn't that drive you out of Reagan?"
"It would bring us together."
"You and Reagan?"
"You and us, my dear morsel. You and us." Karras stared. At the back of his neck, he felt hands icy cold and lightly touching. And abruptly they were gone.
"Caused by fear?" wondered Karras.
"Fear of what?" "Yes, you'll join our little family," Reagan continued. "You see, the trouble with signs in the sky is that once having seen them, one has no excuse. Have you noticed how few miracles one hears about lately?" "Not our fault, dear Karras. We try." Karras jerked around his head at a sudden loud banging sound. A bureau drawer had popped open, sliding out its entire length, and the priest felt a quick rising thrill as he watched it abruptly bang shut. "There it is. A verifiable paranormal event." And then as suddenly, The emotion dropped away, like a rotted chunk of bark from an ancient tree. As the priest remembered psychokinesis and its various natural explanations, hearing a low, sustained chuckling, he turned back to Reagan. She was grinning. How pleasant to chat with you, Karis, she told him in that guttural voice. I feel free. Like a wanton, I spread my great wings. In fact, even my telling you this will serve only to increase your damnation, my doctor, my dear and inglorious physician. You did that? You made the dresser drawer move just now? The creature called Reagan wasn't listening. It had glanced toward the door, to the sound of someone rapidly approaching down the hall, and now its features turned to those of the other personality that had once before appeared.
Damn butchering bastard!
It shrieked in that hoarse, British-accented voice.
Cunting hun!
Through the door came Carl, moving swiftly with the tape recorder. Eyes averted from the bed, he handed it to Karis, and then, ashen-faced, rapidly retreated from the room.
Out, Hibbler! Out of my sight! Go and visit your club-footed daughter! Bring her sauerkraut. Yes, sauerkraut and heroin, Thorndyke! She'll love it! Ha ha!
Carl had slammed the door shut behind him, and now abruptly the thing within Reagan turned cordial.
Oh, yes. Hello, hello, hello. What's up? It said cheerily as it watched Karis setting down the tape recorder on a small round end table next to the bed. Are we going to record something, Padre?
I'll have fun. Oh, I do love to play act, you know.
Oh, yes, immensely.
Oh, good, responded Karis, pushing down on the tape recorder's red record button with his index finger, causing a tiny red light to come on. I'm Damien Karis, by the way, and who are you?
Are you asking for my credits now, ducks? Said with a giggle. Oh, well, I did play Puck of the junior class play.
Glanced around.
There's a drink, incidentally. I'm parched.
If you tell me your name, I'll try to find you a drink.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, of course, it said, giggling again. And then drink it all yourself, I suppose.
Why not tell me your name? Karis asked.
Fucking plunderer.
With this, the British-accented identity vanished and was instantly replaced by the demonic Reagan.
Oh, and so what are we doing now, Karis?
Oh, I see. We're recording.
How quaint.
Karis pulled up a chair beside the bed and sat down. Do you mind? Karis said.
Oh, not at all. Read your Milton, and you'll see that I like infernal engines. They block out all those damned silly messages from him.
Who is him? The creature loudly broke wind.
There's your answer.
Abruptly, a powerful stench assailed Karis. It was an odor like
sauerkraut, Karis? Have you noticed? It does smell like sauerkraut. The Jesuit marveled.
It seemed to be coming from the bed, from Reagan's body. And then it was gone, replaced by the putrid stench of before.
Karis frowned. Did I imagine it? Auto-suggestion. Who's the person I was speaking to before? Karis asked. Oh, merely one of the family.
A demon?
You give far too much credit. The word demon means wise one. He is stupid.
The Jesuit grew tautly alert. Oh, really? In what language does demon mean wise one, he asked.
Why, in Greek, Karis.
You speak Greek?
Very fluently.
One of the signs, Karis thought with excitement. Speaking in an unknown tongue. It was more than he'd hoped for. posegnokas, hoti piespiteros aimi? He asked in classical Greek. I'm not in the mood now, Karis. Oh, I see. Then you really can. I said, I am not in the mood. Karis looked aside, then back, and asked amiably, was that you who made the drawer come sliding out? Oh, most assuredly. Karis nodded. Most impressive. You must be a very, very powerful demon. Oh, I am, my dear morsel. I am. Incidentally, do you like it that at times I sound exactly like my older brother's Screwtape? A burst of high-pitched guffaws and raucous laughter. Karis waited for it to subside. Yes, yes, I do find that interesting, Karis said. But in the meantime, the drawer trick? What about it? It's incredible. I was wondering if you'd do it again. In time. Well, why not now? Why, we must give you some reason for doubt. Yes, just enough to assure the final outcome. How novel to attack through the truth. Yes, yes, surprised by joy indeed. Karis stared, icy fingers once again touching lightly at the back of his neck. Why the fear again, he wondered. Why? Hideously grinning, Reagan said, because of me. Karis stared, feeling wonder again, and then promptly he chipped it down. In this state, she just might be telepathic. Can you tell me what I'm thinking now, devil? My dear Karis, your thoughts are too dull to entertain. Oh, okay. Then you can't read my mind. Is that what you're saying? Reagan looked away, her hand pinching distractedly at her bedsheet, idly lifting and then lowering a tiny linen cone. You may have it as you wish, she then said dully. As you wish. Then silence. Karis listened to the squeaking of the tape recorder mechanism, Reagan's fluttery and whistling, heavy breathing. Thinking he needed more of a sampling of her speech in this state, he leaned forward, hunching over, as if with keen interest. You know, you're such a fascinating person, he said. Reagan turned to him, sneering. You mock. Oh, no, really. I'd love to know more about your background. You never told me who you are, for example. Are you deaf? I have told you I am a devil. Yes, I know. But which devil? What's your name? Now, what's in a name, Karis? Really? All right. Call me Howdy, if that makes you more comfortable. Ah, I see. You're Captain Howdy, Reagan's friend. A very close friend, Karis. Oh, really? But then why do you torment her? Because I am her friend. The piglet likes it. That doesn't make any sense, Captain Howdy. Why on earth would Reagan like to be tormented? Ask her! Would you allow her to answer? I would not. Well, then what would be the point in my asking?
None.
The eyes glinted with mockery and spite. Who's the person I was speaking to earlier? Asked Karis. Oh, come on, you've asked me that before. Yes, I know, but you never give an answer. Just another good friend of the sweet honey piglet. May I speak to this person? No, he is busy with your mother. She is sucking his cock to the bristles, Karis, to the root. Marvelous tongue, soft lips. Karis felt a rage sweeping through him, and then realized with a start that his anger was directed not at Reagan, but at the demon. The demon! He tightly gripped Calm by its shoulders, breathed deeply, and then, standing up, he slipped a slender glass phial from a pocket and uncorked it. Reagan stared at it wearily. "What's that in your hand?" she rasped, drawing back rigidly, her eyes apprehensive. "Oh, don't you know? Why, it's holy water, devil," answered Karis. And as Reagan immediately began whimpering and straining against her straps, he began shooting sprinkles of the vial's content at her.
"Oh, it burns! It burns!"
Reagan cried out gutturally as she thrashed about, writhing in terror and in pain.
Stop it, priest bastard! Stop it!"
Staring blankly, both Karis's body and soul seemed to sag. He stopped sprinkling, and his arm and the vial dropped slowly and listlessly to his side. "Hysteria. Suggestion. She did read the book." He glanced at the tape recorder and then lowered his head and shook it. Why bother? But now he noticed the silence, so airless, so deep. And he looked up at Reagan, and instantly his eyebrows lowered and bunched together in perplexity. "What's this?" he thought. "What's going on?" The demonic personality had vanished, and in its place were other features, which were similar and yet different, with the eyes now rolled upward into their sockets, so that only the whites balefully showed. Lips moving, a feverish gibberish. Karis came around to the side of the bed and leaned over to listen. Nothing, just nonsense syllables. And yet it's got cadence, he thought, like a language. My God, could it possibly be? Karis wondered. Hope. He felt a fluttering of wings in his chest, swiftly gripped them, held them still. Come on, don't be an idiot, Damien. And yet, he checked the tape recorder's volume monitor, dialed up the amplification knob, and was listening intently with his ear held low above Reagan's lips, when abruptly the gibber ceased and was replaced by heavy breathing, raspy and deep. Something new. No, someone new. Karis drew himself up and looked down at Reagan. Quiet wonder. Whites of eyes, eyelids fluttering. "Who are you?" he asked.
"No one, my..."
Something answered him in pain and in a groaning whisper.
"No one, my... No one, my..."
The cracking, breathy voice seemed to come from afar, from some dark, cloistered space at the edge of the worlds, beyond time, beyond hope, beyond even the comfort of resignation and despair. Karis frowned. "Is that your name?" The lips moved, fevered syllables slow, unintelligible, and then abruptly they ceased. "Are you able to understand me?" asked Karis. Silence. Only breathing, long and deep. The sound of sleep in a hospital respirator. Karis waited, hoped for more. Nothing came. Karis picked up the tape recorder, gave Reagan a last searching look, and then left the room and went downstairs. He found Chris in the kitchen sitting somberly over coffee at the table with Sharon. As they saw him approach, the two women looked up at him with a questioning, anxious expectancy. "Better go check on Reagan,"
Chris said quietly to Sharon.
Yes, sure, Chris.
Sharon took a final sip of coffee, gave Karis a little smile of acknowledgement, and left. Karis watched her, and when she was gone, he sat down at the table. Anxiously searching his eyes, Chris asked,
So what's doing?
About to answer, Karis hesitated as Carl entered quietly from the pantry and went over to the sink to scrub pots.
It's okay, Chris said softly.
Go ahead, Father. So what happened upstairs? I mean, what do you think? Karis clasped his hands together on the table.
There were two personalities, he said. One that I had never seen before, and another that I once might have gotten a glimpse of. Adult male, sounds British. Is that anyone you know? Is that important?
Once again, Karis noticed that certain sudden tension in Chris's face.
Yes, I think so, he said. Yeah, it's important.
Chris looked down at the blue porcelain creamer on the table.
Then yeah, she said. Yeah.
I knew him.
Knew?
Chris looked up and said quietly.
Burke Dennings.
The director?
Yes.
The director?
Yes.
Pondering her answer, Karis looked down at her hands. Chris's left index finger was slightly twitching.
Are you sure you don't want coffee or anything, Father?
Karis looked up.
No, I'm okay, he said. I'm fine.
And then resting folded arms on the table, he leaned forward.
And so was Reagan acquainted with him? He asked.
You mean Burke?
Yes,
Dennings.
Well,
sudden sound, a loud clattering. Startled, Chris flinched, then saw that Carl had dropped the roasting pan to the floor. And as he stooped to retrieve it, as he picked it up, he dropped it yet again.
God almighty, Carl.
Sorry, madam, sorry.
Oh, for God's sake, go on, get out of here, Carl. Take a break, go see a movie or something.
No, madam, maybe better at Carl, I mean it.
Chris snapped at him edgily. Get out, just get out of this house for a while. We've all got to start getting the hell out of here. Now go!
Yes, you go, echoed Willie, as she entered and snatched away the pan from Carl's grasp.
She pushed him irritably toward the pantry.
Carl briefly eyed Karis and Chris, and then left.
I'm sorry, Father, Chris murmured.
She reached for a cigarette. He's had to take an awful lot lately.
You were right, said Karis gently. He picked up a packet of matches.
We should all make an effort to get out of the house.
He lit her cigarette, fanned out the match, and placed it in an ashtray as he added,
You too, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
And so, Father, this Burke thing, whatever. I mean, what did it say?
Chris was eyeing the priest intently.
Karis shrugged.
Just obscenity.
That's all.
The priest caught the faint pulse of fear in her tone.
Yeah, pretty much, he responded.
Then he lowered his voice. Incidentally, does Carl have a daughter?
A daughter?
No. Well, not that I know of.
Or if he does, he's never mentioned it.
You're sure about that? Chris turned to Willie, who was scouring at the sink.
Hey, Willie, you don't have a daughter, do you?
Willie kept stolidly scouring as she answered,
Oh, yes, madam. But she died long before.
Oh, I'm sorry, Willie.
Thank you, madam.
Chris turned back to Karis. That's the first I ever heard of her, she whispered.
Why'd you ask? How'd you know?
Oh, Reagan mentioned it. Chris stared at him incredulously and whispered,
What?
She did. Has she ever shown signs before of having a...
ESP.
ESP, Father?
Yeah.
Hesitant, Chris looked aside with a frown.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, there have been lots of times when she...
seems to be thinking the same things that I'm thinking, but, I mean, doesn't that happen with people who are close? Karis nodded and said, yeah, yes, it does. Now, this other personality, the third one that I mentioned, that's the one that showed up when she was hypnotized? Talks gibberish? Yeah, talks gibberish. Who is it? I don't know. It's not familiar at all? No, not at all. Have you sent for Reagan's medical records? Oh, yeah, they'll be here this afternoon. They're coming straight to you, Father. I mean, that's the only way I could get them loose, and even at that, I had to raise holy hell. Yeah, I thought there might be trouble. Yeah, it was. But they're coming. Good. Folding her arms across her chest, Chris leaned back in her chair and stared at Karis gravely. Okay, Father. So where are we right now? What's the bottom line? Well, your daughter... No, you know what I mean, Chris interrupted. I mean, what about getting permission for an exorcism? Karis cast his eyes down and gently shook his head. I'm just not very hopeful I could sell it to the bishop. What do you mean, not very hopeful? How come? Karis dipped into a pocket, extracted the holy water vial, and held it out to Chris. You see this? He asked. Yeah? What about it? I told Reagan it was holy water, Karis said softly. And when I started to sprinkle it on her, she reacted very violently. Oh, well, that's good, Father, isn't it? No. This really isn't holy water. It's just ordinary tap water. So? So what's the difference? Holy water's blessed. Oh, well, I'm really so happy for it, Father. Honest to God, I really am. Chris shot back with a rising frustration and annoyance. And so maybe some demons are dumb. You really believe there's a demon inside her? I believe there's something inside of her that's trying to kill her, and whether it knows piss from 7-Up doesn't seem to have very much to do with it. Don't you think, Father Karis? I mean, sorry. You ask my opinion. Chris irritably tamped out a cigarette in the ashtray. And so what are you telling me now? No exorcism? Look, I've just begun to dig into this, Karis retorted, beginning to match Chris's heat. But the church has criteria that have to be met, and they have to be met for very good reasons, like not doing more harm than good, as well as trying to keep clear of the superstitious garbage that people keep pinning on us year after year. I give you levitating priests, for example, and statues of the Blessed Mother that supposedly cry blood on Good Fridays and feast days. Now, I think I can live without contributing to that. Would you like a little Librium, Father? I'm sorry, but you asked my opinion. I think I pretty much got it. Karis reached for the cigarette pack. Me too, Chris said. Karis extended the pack. Chris took one, then Karis, who lit them both, and together they dragged and then exhaled smoke with audible sighs of relief at the return of calm and peace. Look, I am so sorry, said Karis, looking down at the table. Yeah, those non-filter cigarettes will kill you. After that, there was quiet as Chris looked off to the side and through a floor-to-ceiling window at Key Bridge traffic. Then a sound of something softly and intermittently thumping. Chris turned and saw Karis staring down at the cigarette pack as he slowly kept churning it end over end. Abruptly, he looked up and met Chris's moist and demanding stare. Okay, listen, he said. I'm going to give you the signs that the church might accept before authorizing a formal rite of exorcism. Yeah, good. Good. I want to hear them. Okay. One is speaking in a language that the subject has never known before, never studied. That one I'm working on, okay? We'll see. After that, there's clairvoyance, although nowadays it might be ruled out as just telepathy or ESP. You believe in all that stuff?
Kara studied her, the grimace of disbelief, the frown. She was serious, he decided. Oh, it's undeniable these days, he told her. Although, as I said, it isn't at all supernatural. Good grief, Charlie Brown. Oh, so you do have a skeptical side. Yeah. What other symptoms, Father? Well, the last that the church might accept is, I'm going to quote now, powers beyond her ability and age. Now, that's a catch-all. It means anything inexplicably paranormal or occult. Really? Well, then, what about those poundings in the wall and the way she was flying up and down off the bed? By themselves, they mean nothing. Well, then, what about those things on her skin? What things? I didn't tell you? Tell me what? Oh, well, it happened at Barringer Clinic, Chris explained. There were, well, she traced a finger on her chest. You know, like writing, just letters? They'd show up on her chest, then disappear, just like that. Karis frowned. You said letters, not words? No words. Just an M once or twice. Then there was an L. And you saw this? Karis asked her. Well, no, but they told me. Who told you? Shit, the doctors at the clinic, Chris said irritably. Then okay, sorry, she said. Look, you'll see it in the records. It's for real. But fine, it too could be a natural phenomenon. Oh, really? Where? In Transylvania? Chris erupted again, incredulous. Kara shook his head. Look, I've come across cases of that in the journals, and the bishop could bring it up against us. There was one, I remember, where a prison psychiatrist reported that a patient of his, one of the inmates, could go into a self-induced state of trance and make the signs of the zodiac appear on his skin. He made a gesture at his chest. He made the skin raise up. Boy, miracles sure don't come easy with you, do they? Well, what can I tell you? Look, there was once an experiment in which the subject was hypnotized, put into trance, and then surgical incisions were made in each arm. He was then told his left arm was going to bleed, but that the right arm wouldn't. Well, the left arm bled, and the right arm didn't. Whoa. Yes. Whoa. The power of the mind controlled the blood flow. How? Who knows? But it happens. So in cases of stigmata, like the one with the prisoner I just mentioned, or maybe even with Reagan. The unconscious mind is controlling the differential of blood flow to the skin, sending more to the parts that it wants raised up. And so then you have letters or images, or maybe even words. It's mysterious, but it's hardly supernatural. You're a real tough case, Father Karras, you know that? I'm not the one who sets the rules. Well, you've sure got your heart into enforcing them. Pensive, the priest lowered his head and touched the end of a thumb to his lips. Then he dropped it and looked up at Chris. Listen, maybe this will help you to understand. The church, not me, the church, once published a warning to would-be exorcists. I read it last night. What it said was that most of the people who think they're possessed or a thought to be possessed, and now I'm quoting, word for word, are far more in need of a doctor than of a priest. Now, can you guess when that warning was issued? No. When? The year 1583. Chris stared in surprise at first, and then, lowering her gaze, she murmured, Yeah, that sure was one hell of a year. She heard the priest getting up from his chair. Let me wait and check the records from the clinic, he told Chris. And in the meantime, I'll be taking the tape of Reagan's letter to her father, plus the tape I just made to the Georgetown University Institute of Languages and Linguistics. It could be this gibberish is some kind of a language. I doubt it, but it's possible. In the meantime,
There's a lot that could be riding on comparing Reagan's pattern of speech in her normal state with what I just recorded. If they're the same, well, you'll know for sure that she isn't possessed. And what then? The priest probed her eyes. They were swirling with turbulence. My God, Karis thought. She's worried that her daughter isn't possessed. His nagging sense of some even deeper problem, something hidden, had returned. Could I borrow your car for a while? He asked. Chris looked bleakly aside. You could borrow my life for a while. Just get it back by Thursday. You never know, Father. I might need it. With an ache, Karis stared at the bowed and defenseless head. He yearned to be able to take Chris's hand and assure her that all would be well. But he couldn't. He didn't believe it. Chris stood up. I'll go get you the keys. She drifted away like a hopeless prayer. Karis walked back to his room at the residence hall, where he left Chris's tape recorder, collected the tape of Reagan's voice, then went back across the street to Chris's parked car. As he was settling into the driver's seat, he heard Carl Engstrom calling out from the doorway of Chris's house, Father Karis! Karis looked. Carl was rushing down the stoop. He was pulling on a black leather jacket and waving. Father Karis, please, just a moment, please! He trotted up to Chris's car. Karis leaned over and cranked down the window on the passenger side, where Carl stooped down to look in at Karis and ask, You are going which way, Father Karis?
DuPont Circle, Carl. Ah, yes, good. You could drop me, please, Father. You would mind?
Oh, I'm glad to do it, Carl. Get in.
Ah, I appreciate it, Father.
Carl got into the car and closed the door. Karis started up the engine. Mrs. McNeil is quite right, Carl, he said. Do you good to get out.
Yes, I think so. I go to see a film, Father.
Ah, perfect. Karis put the car in gear and pulled away. And for a time they drove in silence.
Karis preoccupied, searching for answers. Possession? Impossible. The holy water. But still. Carl, you know Mr. Denning's pretty well.
Sitting stiffly erect and staring stoically straight ahead through the windshield, Carl said,
Yes, yes, I know him.
When she appears to be Denning's, do you get the impression that she actually is? A weighted silence. And then a flat and expressionless, I do.
Karis nodded and murmured, I see.
After that, there was no more conversation until they reached DuPont Circle, where they came to a traffic signal and stopped.
Carl opened his door. I get off here, Father Karis.
Oh, really? Here?
Yes, from here I take bus.
Carl climbed out of the car, and with a hand gripping the edge of the open door, he leaned down and said,
Thank you, Father Karis. Very much.
You sure I can't take you all the way, Carl? I've got the time.
No, no, Father. No. This is good. Very good.
Well, okay.
Enjoy the movie. I will, Father. Thank you.
Carl closed the car door and stepped onto a safety island, where he waited for a traffic light to go green. And as Karis pulled away, he stood stoically watching the bright red Jaguar coupe until at last it disappeared around the bend onto Massachusetts Avenue. Carl looked at the traffic light.
It had changed, and he ran for a bus that was now pulling into a bus stop. He boarded, took a transfer, changed buses, and then finally debarked at a northeast tenement section of the city, where he walked three blocks and then entered a crumbling apartment building.
At the bottom of a gloomy staircase, he paused, smelling acrid aromas from efficiency kitchens. Heard from somewhere upstairs the soft crying of a baby
as a roach scuttled quickly from out of a baseboard in erratic, zigzagging darts. And in that moment, the sturdy, stoic houseman's entire being seemed to crumple and to sag. Then, gathering himself, he moved forward to a staircase, put a hand on the banister, and started slowly climbing the creaking and groaning old wooden stairs. To his ears, each footfall had the sound of a rebuke. On the second floor, Carl walked to a door in a murky wing, and for a moment he stood there, a hand on the door frame. He glanced at the wall, peeling paint, graffiti, Petey and Charlotte, and a penciled scrawl, and below it a date and a drawing of a heart that was bisected by a thin, jagged line of cracking plaster. Carl pushed the buzzer and waited, head down. From within the apartment, a squeaking of bed springs, low muttering. Then someone approaching with a sound that was irregular, the dragging clump of an orthopedic shoe. And abruptly the door jerked partly open, the chain of a safety catch rattling to its limits, as a woman in a stained pink paisley slip scowled out through the aperture, a cigarette dangling from the corner of her mouth. Oh, it's you. She unloosed the chain. Carl met the eyes that were shifting hardness, that were haggard wells of pain and blame, glimpsed briefly the dissolute bending of the lips and the ravaged face of a youth and a beauty, buried alive in 1,000 motel rooms, in 1,000 awakenings from restless sleep, with a stifled cry at remembered grace.
Come on, tell him to fuck off!
A coarse male voice from within the apartment. Slurred. The boyfriend. The girl turned her head.
Shut up, asshole, it's Pop!
She turned back to Carl. Hey, listen, he's drunk, Pop, huh? You better not come in. Carl nodded. The girl's hollow eyes shifted down to his hand as it reached to a back trouser pocket for a wallet. How's, Mama? She asked him, dragging on her cigarette, her eyes fixed now on the hands dipping into the wallet, the hands counting out $10 bills. She is fine, Carl nodded tersely. Your mother is fine. As he handed her the money, the girl began coughing rackingly. She threw up a hand to her mouth. Fucking cigarettes, she chokingly complained. Gotta quit, goddammit. Carl stared at the puncture scabs on her arm, felt the $10 bills being slipped from his fingers. Hey, thanks, Pop.
Jesus, hurry it up, growled the boyfriend from within.
Listen, Pop, we better kind of cut this short, okay? You know how we get sometimes.
Elvira.
Carl had suddenly reached through the opening in the door and grasped her wrist.
There is clinic in New York now, he whispered to her pleadingly as she grimaced and struggled to break free from his grip.
Pop, let go.
I will send you. They will help you. You don't go to jail, Elvira. It is...
Jesus, come on, Pop!
Elvira screeched as she wrenched herself free.
No, no, please!
His daughter slammed shut the door. Standing silent and motionless in the dank, graffitied tomb of his hopes, the Swiss manservant stared without sight for long moments, until at last he slowly lowered his head in grief. From within the apartment, he could hear a muffled conversation that ended with a cynical, ringing woman's laugh. It was followed by a spate of coughing. Carl turned away and felt a sudden stab of shock.
Perhaps we could talk now, said Kinderman, hands in the pockets of his coat, his eyes sad. Yes, I think that perhaps we could now have a talk.